It's time for the Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Also streaming live at KFARradio.com. Sponsored by Compos, your home for fun in the great outdoors. And now your host, Craig Compo.
Hey, welcome Fairbanks. Welcome back to the Compo Outdoor Show. It's another Saturday in Fairbanks, middle of the summer. Always a fun time of year and lots of fun stuff going on. It's solstice going on. We've got just a little of everything outdoors. You know, it's a good time to get out in the boat, get out on the four-wheeler, get out. And if you need help doing that, there's a place called Compos down on Boat Street that can help you with that. We got new and used boats. We got four-wheelers, snow machines, ATV side-by-sides, boat trailers. And then we got all the stuff to make it fun. You know, we've got all the different, we got all kinds of stuff. We just got safety equipment. We've got cargo, meat haulers, you know, you name it. If it has to do with the outdoors, we got it. So anyway, this last weekend was one of the biggest interior events of the year, is the Yukon 800 boat race. Really interesting, very, very unique race. There's really nothing like it. And today in the studio, I've got the first and second place winners of the Yukon 800, Kyle Malamute, who works at Compos, and Tommy Kriska, good friend, longtime customer. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this race, for those, well, most people that listen to the station are very familiar with it, but it's different every year, isn't it? Like, Kyle, I mean, you never know what the water is going to be like, what the competition is going to be like. You're usually running against a lot of the same people, but there's always something new. Tell a little bit of race history, first of all, we'll talk about. And I know this thing started in like 1960 from Circle to Fairbanks, and they've changed it over the years, and now it's Fairbanks to Galena and back. It's 800 miles on three different rivers, and sometimes a lot of sloughs. It depends if you try and take shortcuts or whatever. But you both grew up in the village. Kyle, do you remember watching this race as a young kid? What's your earliest memories of the Yukon 800?
Probably 5-6 years old. I watched it coming to Galena every year. Kind of looked up to the guys and always wanted to be in the race eventually. Even as a teenager, we'd build little speed boats that weren't quite as fast as them, but we tried to act like them all the time.
Yeah, just a minute. How about you, Tommy?
Probably when I was 8 or 9 years old, when we're allowed to go to Galena for the Yukon 800 boat race, and then once I found out that who they were and what these boats do, I kind of went every year, and
it's kind of addictive, huh?
It got addictive, yeah, and just wanted to be in there. Then tried to build little pull boats along the. Running along the river.
Simulate them, yeah. Like the big boys. Tommy, you grew up in Koyukuk.
I grew up in Koyukuk.
And Kyle, Tanana?
Galena.
Or Galena, okay, but you spent time in Tanana, or no?
Yeah, my wife's from Tanana, oh, so I spent a lot of time there.
So you're real familiar with the area. You guys all grew up on the water. It gives you an advantage. You can imagine some guy from Fargo, North Dakota, coming up and try to run this race for the first time. Probably wouldn't do so well, but it's really interesting because I know that you guys both know the river really well. I remember when I was on the showroom one time with a customer, and he was from out of state, and he was going to take a boat trip to, I don't know, Hoosley or somewhere. He was going to do something that was kind of out of his wheelhouse. And I'm standing, Tommy was on the showroom just hanging out there, the guy asked me, he goes, I'm really worried about getting any nana. He goes, how do I read that river or whatever? And in three words, Tommy said something that was probably the best three words you could use for somebody novice like that, and that was follow the sticks, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah,
follow the sticks. And why is that?
On the Tanana River, the drift and the white foam tends to follow the current.
The deeper water.
The deeper water.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that from late Jake Starr.
Oh, yeah.
And Lester Earhart, when I lived in Tanana for 13 years, they said that, well, the best GPS you can have on the Tanana is follow the sticks.
Yeah.
You won't never get in trouble.
Yeah, that's good advice. And there's a lot of those kind of tricks that guys from the village that grew up on the river know. I mean, every you're always learning something on the river, but every year that you get that file away into memory, it's just automatic after a while, right? You don't even think about it. You just go there and so forth. Well, this year was interesting. Rough water. Kyle, tell me about the race from Fairbanks, from Pikes or Fairbanks down to down to Galena. How did that go for you?
I was actually not bad leaving Fairbanks. We had pretty good water all the way to around Charlie Bolden's, which is right above Manly, and that's kind of where the little bit of chop started. And it just progressed, so we started hugging the banks below Manly, got into the Squaw Crossing area, and that's where the big waves started coming. It was just rolling out there. We kind of just picked our way in through the shallows to stay out of the waves. And on the Yukon, we knew it was going to be rough all the way to Galena, so we kind of just put out a path that we're just going to stay on the north bank and cross when we can. But yeah, it was pretty brutal, about 230 miles of rough water on the way down.
So what kind of speeds? I know the boats are capable of 70 mile an hour, you know, which for a small motor, that's amazing. People, when you tell that to them, they just say, that can't be right. But what kind of speeds do you have to run? I know it depends on the height of the white caps and everything, but what do you think you were running when you were in the bad stuff, or what's a safe speed to run?
I was kind of backing off, I would say anywhere 45 to 54 miles an hour or so on average.
And you're watching GPS?
Oh yeah, watching GPS and just trying to make sure I'm not slowing down too much. I knew Tommy was on my heels. But yeah, we were kind of taking it easy on the Yukon, just didn't want to break anything, you know. You gotta make it all the way home to finish.
What about you, Tommy? Anything, any issues or any problems, Fairbanks to Galena?
Well, I couldn't figure out my motor, and I'm really good with them, and I couldn't figure the motor out. I was having issues from the start. I only get like 63 miles an hour. 63.8 was the fastest I've seen to Galena. So I told my crew that, we only got that, and we're already in it. We paid it. We might as well just go, and it seems like it's going to be rough, so we're just going to
It's a battle of attrition, really.
Yep. Yeah. So I told them all those other boats are different, and this is pretty strong boat, so we're going to hammer through those waves. And the speeds I seen was, even going through Squaw Crossing, was 49 miles an hour. I just flew right through there and the bad stuff, and we were... They're kids, they hang on pretty good. They know what to do.
Yeah.
And when we got into around Galena, I didn't expect to be so big waves. I turned into it, and a lot of the time you turn into the wind, it's almost impossible to turn out of it because easy can flip or roll or so.
And a lot of body English involved. Your passengers are doing everything they can to keep your boat flat.
And oh, yeah. They're
ballast.
Yeah, they're a bird. Yep.
What about, I was wondering, Kyle, your speeds were okay going down there. I mean, pretty good. But what position did you leave at?
I left sixth out of seven.
Okay, so when did you pass the last boat? I mean, where were you at when you passed, when you knew?
Yeah, it was right below Old Minto. There was two guys traveling together, and we kind of passed them about the same time, within the same mile.
Okay. And Tommy, you left to what position?
I left in first.
Started slowing down?
No, I had I tried to do everything I can with my with that problem, and I raised up my motor and tried. It was detonating, and what it did was killed all three of the plugs.
Oh,
one shot.
So, okay.
At the same place above Nenana, wow. So I switched them out. And
so you had to stop. And Kyle, was it on the way down to Galena? You had to. Did you have a prop issue, I think?
Yeah, we pulled in 10, and we had a curled over prop. I don't know. I hit 7 or 8 times just going to 10. We were taking chances a little bit. We were still getting good speed, and I didn't really think nothing of it. I had a little bit of cavitation issues the last 50 miles, and just kind of kept the RPMs, and it was getting rough, so I knew top speed. You know, we were doing okay. But, yeah, we got 10, and it was pretty curled over, and we had to change the prop in 10.
And the challenges on these rivers are multifold. You've got... Not only you've got shallow shelves, you've got submerged logs that are half floating down there. Do you know what you? I mean, when you're hitting bottom, you don't want to hit anything. I mean, it shakes your molars. I know when you hit a log with a prop hard enough. But could you feel vibration? Just a lack of speed. When did you know you had to change your prop?
When I pulled in 10, I actually didn't know. I knew I hit something hard around the Kantishna. But everything still felt fine. We were still getting good speeds. But yeah, when we pulled in Canada and starting to refuel, some spectators there saw my prop and said, yeah, you need to change prop.
Now, you all carry a spare prop?
Yeah, we carry three total. Yep.
You carry three props. What other stuff do you have to carry, Tom? What is the requirements? I know they always had requirements you had to carry certain stuff.
Oh, you got to have your two paddles, your safety gear, safety helmet, flares, food, communication, either satellite phone or inReach, some way to contact the people back. A lot of things.
What about extra fuel? It's not a requirement, but do people carry extra fuel?
Well, for me, I always take off with 30 gallons of fuel everywhere I
stop. How big are the tanks on these boats?
Well, my two tanks on the rear are two 10-gallon tanks on the back, and I got two 5-gallon tanks up in front.
Okay. Kyle?
Mine is about 28 gallons capacity altogether.
Okay, and even including yours?
My spare, yeah. Spare,
okay. Yep. So what is the toughest stretch there? I mean, where and normally you got enough fuel to make it unless you have either mechanical issues or really, really rough weather. Did either of you have to get into your spare fuel this year?
I used my spare fuel. If it's rough water, I'll start running on my rear tanks, and if it's calm, I run out my front first.
You got a selector valve. Yeah,
selector valves. Okay. Just all depends on the weather.
Yeah. Well, what about spectators along the way? I mean, obviously you're going to see them at the main areas, but do you see them randomly in the middle of nowhere, just pulled over, watching you? They're rooting you on. Kyle, when do you, you know? I mean, how long can you go without seeing anybody?
Geez, leaving Fairbanks, we really didn't see anybody. There was a couple of boats below Fairbanks. Always are.
Yeah.
Out of the blue, we'd see some outside Manly sometimes. There was a big crowd on the sandbars there. We came around a corner, and probably 40 people on the sandbar, so that was pretty cool to see. And then a crazy one coming up river, going to the finish, down by the Wood River, we ran into two kayaks right in a shortcut. Yeah. And, we gave them about 10 feet of room there. So that was kind of strange to see a couple kayaks in a real off-channel shortcut.
Yeah. We're going to go to commercial in a couple minutes. I was going to just say, I only went on one time on the Yukon 800. I was a businessman's race to Old Minto and back, and I was with Danny Parrish, and we were going down. There's a slough there by Old Minto. I think it was Old Minto turnaround, but I think it was before that. There's a slough where the Rampart barge, Utana barge, was parked. I thought it was in a slough or a channel. And it was there when we went down Old Minto, and when we came back, it had just fired up. And of course, you're talking about some rollers. Thing had taken off, and we went headfirst into them at 55, 60 miles an hour. And I'm in the front of that boat, and we hit the first wave, and then when we hit the second wave, the front 8 foot of the boat blew off and went right by my head behind me, and then we just basically sunk. I mean, he pointed it over towards the shore, and by the time we got over there, the boat was on the bottom. That was my one and only experience with the Yukon 800. I mean, with the Yukon 800 boat, but it was a lot of fun. I think we were in second at the time out of six boats or something, and we wound up not finishing. We were DNF. But anyway, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about boats and about the motors and what's changed and just some other stuff. I was always wondering I know it's like the Yukon 800, I mean the Iron Dog, there's when somebody's in trouble what you do, and just some of the other stuff that's interesting to me on the race. I know that there's I've talked to over the years all the guys that used to run the race, and they're still neat. Milt Moses Sr. was sitting there watching, and it's been I don't know how many years since he ran, but he was watching the racers go by. So it's something that you never lose your attraction of if you were ever involved in a race. It's really good. If you've never watched the Yukon 800, and we're going to talk about how to either get involved or if you ever want to participate, we'll talk about that after the break. So guests are Kyle Malamute and Tommy Kriska, first and second place in the 2023 Yukon 800. We'll be back in just a minute.
The Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio will return right after this.
For more than 75 years, the go-to outdoor business in Fairbanks has been Compo's. Bob Compo Sr. first opened the doors on 12th and Cushman in 1945. A lot has changed since then, but one thing hasn't changed. Compo's passion for getting you outdoors and away from the rat race, and their business philosophy can be wrapped up in a few words Bob Sr. used to say. And that's, treat people right and they'll tell a few others. Treat them poorly and they'll tell a few dozen. Compo, on Boat Street, doing business in Fairbanks since Harry Truman was president.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30, a look at Alaska's budding new industry, brought to you by Good Titrations, followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon. Then it's the Compo's Outdoor Show at 12:30. And don't miss Fairbanks Foodies at 5:30, talking everything food and fun in Fairbanks. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio. And now, back to the Compo's Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, Fairbanks. We're talking with Kyle Malamute and Tommy Kriska. And I'm going to do a little housekeeping before we get back to the race over at Compo's. We've got a bunch of stuff going on there right now, so I've got to shamelessly plug our promos and business. It's Can-Am season, so we've got a bunch of Can-Ams that have been coming in and going out the door. Most of them have deposits on them, so you gotta, this time of year, you gotta be quick. We do have a decent supply of side-by-sides just came in, Commanders and Defenders and Mavericks. We've got some XMRs, a lot of, and some of the Maverick X3s, the four-seaters with 200 horsepower, pretty amazing rigs. But you can come in and check them out. We're gonna have a special on some of them. I know we've got demo status. We're gonna have some demos where we can get some extra money off. Some of them won't be available for a little while. You got to hit a certain number of hours on them as a dealer, and then but it comes with a new warranty and everything, so you save a bunch of money. I think on that Maverick X3 Max, we're gonna have almost $3,000 off for maybe 100 miles or 200 miles on it. So pay attention to that. And we're playing Can-Am Poker, which is kind of fun this month. So if you come by the shop and you want to take a short demo ride, you got a chance to win a brand new Can-Am. You take a demo ride, just got a little short trail system. We're really trying to get people to try out these new 5 and 700s. They're just amazingly smooth machines, Aura size, the comfort of the new side-by-sides, the cab models. But you come out, you go for a short ride, and then you flip over five cards in a deck, and with the right hand, it's got to be a good hand. But you could win a Can-Am, you can win $1,000 compo cash, you can win $1,000 hard cash, you can win... you know, even for something as low as two pair, you get compo cash. So anyway, fun thing to do. Plus, you get to take a break on your lunch, come out and just take a 5 or 10 minute ride. And then you can tell 30 or 40 people how nice those new Can-Ams are. Anyway, we're back with Kyle and Tom. Kyle's my lead salesman. He has been for a dozen years or so. And he's, you know what I like about Kyle is he owns and plays with everything we sell. You know, he's got a lot of people that are in the sales department. They're all talk, but you know, when you get somebody that can tell you the difference between two models or why he likes this boat and share river experiences, share off-road experiences, you know, always Kyle's always got a couple snow machines going in the winter. So it's really good to have somebody that's a user of the product and can, you know, obviously explain, and it's a legitimate. Somebody asks you a question, well, how would this tow compare to that? And he's done it, so that's good. Tommy, you're the same way. Tommy's kind of a salesman for us, too, even though he doesn't work for us. He's always, yeah, I get somebody from the village who goes, yeah, Tommy says I need to buy this. That's what I need to buy. So it's good to have both you guys on our side. Anyway, we're talking Yukon 800, and, you know, we talked about growing up on the river and getting into it as a young age. One of the things I always like to see is kind of the ethical standards on these different races. We've watched it on the Iron Dog, typically. You know, bad things can happen on the river, and at the end of the day, it's a race. It's so if there's a life and death situation, I mean, is there a rule book, or is it just you do the right thing? Kyle, what do you know about that? What's the rule? What's the river rule?
Yeah, I mean, if someone's in distress, yeah, you definitely stop. We try to watch our time if we are stopped, but yeah, we're all there for each other, and we all want safety for each other. So, like this year, we had a couple of boats bust in half, and some guys did have to try to help. But also, I've been on both ends of it, where I've crashed and people stopped for me, so definitely yeah. Much appreciated.
Pay it forward?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Tom, how about you? You ever crash?
Oh, yeah. Many times. Yeah, I flipped in a boat back in 2006, broke my arm, barrel rolled the boat right over a sandbar.
That was by Manly, wasn't it?
That was by Manly, yeah. And then had to get medevaced in by a chopper. So,
right.
Yeah, there were other race boats there. They immediately stopped because they'd seen this boat. It was kind of standing up on its side, and I was underneath it, and yeah.
Your crew hit the water too?
Yeah. No, we didn't hit the water. Oh. We hit the sandbar, and barrel rolled over the sandbar.
Oh.
The boat caught, and it started rolling.
Wow, and that's when you broke your shoulder.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in any situation out there, life or death situation, if you see them out in the waves or something happened, definitely we will automatically just stop.
Well, my next little topic was scariest moments on the river. That was probably yours?
Yeah, just because I was worried about the other two, I didn't know what was going on with them. I actually jumped up and started walking and tried to
help
pick up one of my crew members, and my arms dropped, and it didn't want to do what it's supposed to do, and I was like, huh.
It's all adrenaline, and you didn't know it was broken.
Didn't know it was broken.
Wow.
And, yeah.
What about you, Kyle? Do you have any scary moments in either this year's race or last year's?
I mean, getting into rough water is always a little scary and nerve-wracking, but back in 2018, me and my crewman, Josh Rutman, we kited our boat pretty bad and went straight up in the air, flipped over upside down. And when I popped out of the water, I didn't see Josh for a minute or two. Or, I don't know, it felt like a minute or two, but seconds, really.
Yeah.
And he had to climb out from underneath the boat, so that was probably my scariest moment.
And you see that, you know, obviously when they capture those on videos, that's the ooh moment. You know, you see, I think Binkley, they got a good view of him a few years ago when he kited the boat. Is that typically driven by a wind change, a current change? Tommy, what you know, you've seen some of that happen too over the years. What causes that? When we say kite, you know, these are 24-foot boats. What do they weigh roughly?
I don't know,
400 pounds.
Yeah,
maybe.
And you're going 70 miles an hour, and obviously you're just skimming the surface. And I've seen pickle fork boat racers in the States. They're going 200-300 miles an hour, and those things just kite, and they're going upside down 4 or 5 times in the air. But it's same effect. But do we know what it's caused by? Is it just certain conditions?
There's a lot of ways that it could happen, like coming off of a swift water into an eddy. A lot of time, if you think about it, as soon as that boat, if you watch your speedo, and as soon as that boat hit the coming off of a downriver water, like that's what happened to the Binkleys, they came into an eddy, and automatically you have this high RPM in the motor, and you got to remember that prop is being driven by that motor, so it can kick that boat out of underneath you.
Yeah.
And it happened to me on this last trip. And we weren't really going fast, but just hitting that different current, it lifted that bow. RPM jumped. It jumped like 600 RPM.
It's almost like wheeling in a snow machine.
Yep,
you hit come out of the soft snow, you hit the trail, and all of a sudden the front end comes up.
And then the wind can cause that too. You got to watch that wind on the turns, especially. on a either on a left turn mostly. Okay. You got to watch it. Yeah.
So on these boats, I mean, they've changed over the years. There's different styles of boats. Kyle, how many of them are the same style? How many is everything a little bit different? I mean, I know they've got the, it looks like a Formica bottom on them. They're just smooth. What's changed? Is it, and is there one that seems to work better, or does some work better in glass and other work better in rough water? What's your feeling on the hull design?
So you're going to see a lot. There's two main designs, the open boat and a tunnel boat. Like Tom helped me build my boat back in 2015. So it was a tunnel boat. And I wanted a little more speed, tried to get a little more speed, so we cut the tunnel out and made it an open boat. And that's what you're seeing most right now is open boats. Tunnel boats aren't as common anymore, but Tom still runs one. They're super strong, still fast, and that's kind of what played effect this year. You know, tunnel boats are strong for a reason, and right. He made it to the finish line with it.
What about motors? You know, for years, I mean, you got horsepower limitations, obviously. Tell me a little bit about motors that over the last few years, what's changed?
So, I mean, again, 52 strokes kind of dominated for decades.
Yep.
About 7-8 years ago, they adopted the option of going to 64 strokes. And that's kind of where a lot of guys are leaning right now, just reliability. A little easier on gas as well, but it's a trade-off because they are much heavier than the two strokes.
Right.
What I've noticed with mine, I run a four-stroke now, is it just holds good speed and RPMs through the turns, and that's where I really notice the difference. Top end, definitely a little bit, but it's more holding the speeds in the corners.
Okay. So for what about if somebody wanted to participate either as a volunteer, you got the Fairbanks Outboard Association, they get a hold of them through Facebook, or they get a hold of one of you guys, or how does that happen? First of all, like to, if they just are really into the race and want to help,
either or. I would say most stuff nowadays is done on Facebook, so definitely check out our Facebook page, and you can always message us if you come across us out in the streets. Definitely, yeah, don't be afraid to approach us.
And Tom, I imagine you guys would be happy to share information, or somebody goes, hey, I want to build a boat, I want to do that. It's not like, no, you're not getting my trade secrets, right? I mean, you want people in this race, right?
Yep. That's one of the reasons I helped out Kyle. Yep. He wanted a boat, or he took a ride in my boat, and forget what year was that.
That was 2014.
See, now, and he beat you, see, so you screwed up, Tommy.
Nope, that's okay. The design of what I had in mind did it first and second, but then...
Yeah.
Yeah, I am into probably going to get one of my younger ones involved in driving another boat, so I'm looking to build a whole new outfit myself here.
Good. Well, that's cool. And, you know, the one thing I always want to talk about, because it's a small number of racers, but it's a big draw, and it's people, it's kind of like the Iron Dog. People want to watch it from the river. It's really big for rural communities. But there's some sponsors like Ruby Marine. I mean, could you guys even have this race without Ruby Marine? And go over some of the sponsors that you're...
Yeah, I mean, Doyon Limited and Ruby Marine, for the past 10 years that I've kind of been involved, they're their backbone in keeping this race alive. We've reached out to a lot of different companies this year trying to grow the sport. Tan the Chiefs Conference, Cruise Construction, Alaska Fast Cash, Iron Dog, Crowley, Three Bears, Alaska, Loudoun Tribal Council, Hill Corp, Auto Trim Design. I mean, there's some big names stepping up and getting involved. So we definitely want to grow the sport, and we appreciate all their help.
I think that's really important because, again, you don't want to ever watch this race go away. That's always kind of thought, ooh, you know, you had 7 or 8 boats and you lost a couple. We got to do whatever we can to get more boats in this race and keep the guys going. I mean, it's such an Alaskan event, you know. They don't do this anywhere else in the world, right? They don't have anything like this anywhere.
I was hoping that ConocoPhillips and Alyeska would get involved, since they're here in Alaska, or any big companies that are doing things in Alaska to get involved in this race. It's the world's longest, toughest boat race in the world, and I don't think it's going to go away with this young guys. Leading it. I led it from before, and I just hope it'll grow something like the Iron Dog.
Yeah. Well, it's been good having you guys on. It's been good. It's a great race. It's always fun. It's challenging. It's it's just one of those things that we don't want to see go away. It's part of Alaska, it's part of Fairbanks, and it's part of your guys' lives growing up. So thanks for coming in. Tommy Kriska, Kyle Malamute. We'll be back next Saturday with a second with another edition of the Compo Outdoor Show. Be safe out there. And read the river properly, right? Tommy, follow the sticks.
Oh, yeah, follow the sticks.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see you. Yep.
You have been listening to the Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio, streaming live at kfarradio.com. To listen back to this program or any past episodes, simply click on the Compos Outdoor Show in the Archives tab on the website.